Hi, I'm Bob Acton, your host on the Color and Ceramics podcast. Welcome. Today, we are stepping into the strange, beautiful world of Canadian sculptor David Altmaid. Born in Montreal in 1974 and now based in Los Angeles, California, David is obsessed with what makes a person. The body, yes, but also the mind, the imagination, the energy, and whatever we mean by soul. His figures often feel like they're falling apart and coming together at the same time, opening little doorways into places beyond what we normally recognize. What blows me away is his materials list: clay and foam, next to mirror, quartz, resin, and even human and synthetic hair. He's just as comfortable casting as he is building through intuitive, almost scavenger-style making, so that every piece feels singular, even when it echoes another. Scale doesn't scare him either. He brings the same intensity to a room-sized environment as he does to a small bust, packing surfaces with tiny inventions that reward long looking. David has shown all over the world. His work lives in major collections like the Whitney, the Guggenheim, MoCA Los Angeles, and the Art Gallery of Ontario. In this episode, we talk about his work, the energy in his work, and how he uses his unconscious to create the work itself. Let's get into it. David, thank you so much for joining us today on the Color and Ceramics podcast. We are very excited about having you on board here to talk about your fantastic work. I love your animal work, and your latest work, The Serpent, at the White Cube Gallery in New York is unbelievable. So anyway, I will stop talking and say welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk to you.
Yes, no, it's wonderful. And it's always nice to talk to a fellow Canadian. You were born in Montreal and now reside in LA, I understand.
That's right. Yeah, I was born in Montreal, and then I moved to New York, lived in New York for 20 years, and I just moved to Los Angeles 5 years ago.
Ah. That's the journey of an artist often, isn't it? To whether you're a musician or an artist like you are, to hit New York and LA and Montreal. Those are hot spots for a really innovative contemporary art.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but yeah, like now that you're saying it, yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I wonder, you know, if you could describe where you came from and kind of your background in the art to give people a sense of who you are as they listen to this.
Well, growing up, you know, like a lot of kids, I was very much into drawing. So I used to draw very, very often. And, you know, that's a little bit, I developed a kind of confidence about my drawings, you know, like, you know, I'd make drawings during class and pass my notebooks around so that other students could see it, and everybody really enjoyed it. So, I mean, so I really developed a kind of taste and excitement for drawing. But what I wanted to do, my intention was to become a biologist. So that's the studies that I made. I started university. I started at McGill University in Montreal. I started in biology. I very quickly realized that even though I really loved the subject, that I wasn't going to be able to go through the academic part, you know, like aspect of it. That's what I wasn't going to be able to do. I was too interested in creativity. I was interested in sort of like trying to think about science, but in a completely creative way, you know? So I wasn't interested in learning languages and codes and, you know, stuff like that. I just wanted to create. So I guess it was a difficult decision, but I just decided to drop science and go to art school.
Very cool. Now, did you go to McGill for art?
No, I went to UQAM, which is University of Quebec in Montreal. Yeah.
Okay. And there, did you, what did you study there? What brought you, what started the journey to the kind of work that you're doing now?
Well, it was I started studying I entered art school as a drawer slash painter because that's what I had always done. But there were a couple of, in the program, there were a couple of mandatory classes like sculpture. Everybody had to take Introduction to Sculpture, for example. And so I took that class and I made an object for the first time. And I knew right away that that was what I was supposed to do. I mean, I guess the reason is that all of a sudden I related to the object, the art object, in a completely new way. Like the fact that the sculpture as an object exists in a real space. Like I imagine that drawing and painting exist in the kind of space of representation. It exists in the space of representation, in that sort of like flat space. And then all of a sudden, I made a sculpture, and I had the feeling like it existed a little bit like I did as a body inside the space. So it was sort of like as present as I was. It was breathing the same air. It was it had a sort of inner space. Literally, it had an inner space, an outer space. It functioned very much like the body. And so I immediately became aware of its potential. If it exists a little bit like my body, it sort of has the potential of existing like I do, or like a person does in the world. This object that has a infinite interior space. And so I saw that as like, having a lot of power. So I just decided to do this for the rest of my life.
Very cool. It's very thrilling to see that magic of sculpture, isn't it? That that it's almost alive with you, even though it might be a piece of dirt or clay or a piece of metal, but in a way it does have a life unto its own.
And totally. And I think that also there's something about like making it with your hands that's sort of like there's a transfer, a literal transfer of energy. You're kind of like transferring that life energy, or maybe you're not. Maybe it's transferring its life energy to you, but there's something that goes on, that's it's very alchemical.
Yeah, it's very interesting you use the word energy because I've often felt that about my work. Like if I'm making something and I'm doing it, I don't know, because I think it will sell, it doesn't have the energy in it that another piece I might do because I love it. And it seems to me that when people look at my work, they recognize that energy in a kind of unconscious way. Do you have that same kind of experience?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, no, it's interesting to see how depending on how an object materializes, in terms of my attitude, if I have like, as you're saying, if I'm thinking about if I'm making an object so that other people will react to it in a specific way, and I'm thinking about the outside world a little too much, then yeah, it is sort of like lacking a kind of life, And when I'm more into the mood of letting the object sort of become alive, and when I'm letting the object sort of like have a voice, become alive, then it's like it becomes much more powerful, I think. And it's
I was looking at one of your pieces, a rabbit that you had made, and it made me wonder whether when you approach your work, do you have a sort of complete idea of what the work will be before you touch the material? Or in your case, does the work sort of emerge out of the material as you begin to touch it and work with it?
Yeah, I think that there's different parts in the process of making a sculpture. For me, there's different parts, and it's always starts with a very specific idea of something specific I want to make. You know, for example, I have ideas, and then I make sketches. And the sketches that I make in my sketchbook are just a way of getting out of my head. It's like the first step that I take into that the art takes into reality, you know? So once I make the sketch of my idea, I become really excited, and then I go in the studio and I start making it. I start working with material. So so yes, I do start with a specific idea. I make the sketch, and then I start working with the material. But when I start working with the material, it always takes a completely new direction. So I can't, so to answer your question, yes, I have a specific idea of what the piece is going to be, but it never ends up being what I thought it was going to be.
It's kind of like a dance between the material and yourself, in a way, given what we were talking about with energy and so on, right?
Totally. I mean, I do feel like material contains its own will, its own intelligence, its own sexuality even, you know. And I think that I'm becoming aware of that more and more. But I think that my role as an artist is to let that energy take the shape that it wants to take, you know?
That's very interesting, because I was going to ask you what you thought your job was as an artist, and I guess you've answered that in some ways. Like, it's allowing the idea to emerge through the medium that you're working with.
Yeah, it's allowing. I don't know if I would say idea. Maybe I'd even say some sort of like invisible energy or spirit or something like that. Something that's kind of like not necessarily dormant, but definitely invisible, you know? And I think that like by touching the material, I'm sort of activating it. And I might wake up that energy, and then like as I work, I start hearing that sort of invisible thing that's on the other side, sort of like speak to me, you know, not literally. It's not like I'm not hearing voices, but I can see like that every time there's a micro event, you know, when I'm working on an object and there's a micro unexpected event. You know, either like it's one might call it a mistake, you know. I interpret it as the voice of that spirit that's on the other side, that's telling me, no, pay attention to this. That's what I want, you know. And so I try to respect that. So instead of always correcting my mistakes, I try to listen to them and try to understand what it might say about the thing that's on the other side that wants to take shape, you know? So like basically so what I'm doing is I'm just kind of I'm dressing up that invisible thing. I'm giving it a form, and it's the form that it wants to take. You know, it's not me who does. You know, in a certain way, if I decide everything about the form, like it's my ego that decides, you know? And I feel like if I'm letting the thing, the material decide for itself, then it's something deeper that's, you know, that's unconscious, that's sort of emerging.
It's almost like a birth of the piece, and that you're allowing that birth to occur.
And sometimes also as I work on the sculpture, I can feel that unconscious, invisible thing emerge more and more clearly. And sometimes I even feel like I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but it happens sometimes where like the thing that's being born is ecstatic about being given a form and existing in this world. Something like very often it's like things that have been dormant for a really long time. You can feel that it is so happy to be given a form, you know? And I like that energy means a lot. It definitely for me means that I'm definitely on the right track, you know?
Yes, I can see a movie in the background of you making a movie with these pieces that begin to come alive. Yeah, that's great. Hey, now this is an auditory podcast in the sense that people are not going to be looking at your work as they listen. And my hope is that through links and whatnot that we put up, that people will have a look at your work. Could you, and you've been doing a lot of work for a number of years, I wonder if you could describe for the audience the work you're doing. I know that's an awfully big question, but maybe the more recent work that you're doing, or the journey that you've taken with that work, so that people get a sense of your work.
I think that the work that I've been making for the past few years is definitely figurative. They're mostly busts. They look like portraits of mythical creatures or animals or humans with animal heads or humans with a specific expression. But the way that I make them is that because I work so much, the way that I make them is by really combining different materials and then cutting holes in the bust and then filling it with another material. So it's very much about subtraction and addition. And I'm trying to, every time I'm working on a piece, on a bust, I'm trying to really accumulate a lot of layers, you know, as if, the busts that I work that the busts that I work on are always made with like, you know, at least 10 layers of different personalities, even. You know, I could start with a human face and then I could cut off the jaw and start building a panther head instead of a human head, and then that panther head could become something else. So I like this idea that at the end I'm in front of a sort of like portrait of a mythical creature, but that it contains a whole geology of layers. You know, if I cut through something, and I do it sometimes, you know, after the piece is over and or I think it's over, I cut it in half and I can see all the layers inside that correspond to the history of the making of the piece. You know, I like that a work of art like that would have would be would contain all the history of its own making, you know? I don't know if I'm probably not describing it very clearly, but yeah, and then, like and I guess another thing that that I try to do is, you know, make the bust or the portrait feel like it's alive, you know? Very much into colors, contrasts of material, as many materials as possible, actually. Spend a lot of times on eyes. I have a special technique to make eyes.
Well, the eyes are very important because that's what we all look at immediately when we hit a piece. So that's I can see why that is a critical component of your work. I guess I have this question about, we see each other's work primarily on Instagram these days or on our websites, and it's all two-dimensional, of course, and because it's very difficult to get that three-dimensional feel. Do you notice that when your audience or customers or just people observing your work, when they see it in that two-dimensional form, their reaction is much different than when they see it in when they're present with the piece? Because that energy that we talked about, the layers, the all of that seems to must have to come through in a when you're present with the work.
Yeah, I think so, but no, I actually I feel like people are even through social media and that's sort of what you're calling the, did you say flat image,
Two-dimensional, yeah.
two-dimensional image. I think that I think that people are able to feel the energy. You know, it's like when you're seeing the picture of a person, you can get a sense, you know, of like the mystery behind them or whatever, depending on the picture. But like I think that I think that a two-dimensional image can convey a lot of the energy and but it's not the same, obviously. It's not the same as kind of almost being able allowed to touch it, you
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
And turn around it, or you know, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the material that you use? I know this is a, we started this podcast with a focus on ceramics and clay, of course, and I know you mess around with a little bit of clay, but you use a lot of other things, spray foam. You have a big repertoire of resources. Can you describe some of your materials that you use to create these pieces?
Yeah, usually I start by carving whatever the shape, the sculpture that I want to make. I start carving it in styrofoam, and then I cover it with a material that's called, it's a sort of epoxy clay. It's a little bit, it has kind of like the consistency of clay, but it's synthetic and it hardens. You know, there's a chemical reaction and it hardens within like a few hours. That's what I do mostly to create the core of the sculpture. And then I come in and I add all sorts of colors and paints and resins. But yeah, usually my materials are very synthetic just because I think that there's a speed in my process. I need to be able to have something solid in front of me real fast, and then I need to be able to edit it afterwards by cutting through it, making holes, adding some new materials. So I like using materials that are just because of the speed, the specific speed of my process, materials that are can harden very fast, and after that that I can sand and cut off and rebuild on top of it. So these are perfect. The materials that I use, those synthetic materials, are perfect for that. But I start like I now I have a I just it's funny that we're having this conversation because I just got a kiln and I started making ceramics and I'm teaching myself ceramics. It's amazing.
It's slower though, I gotta say. You have to wait a lot. You have to have a lot of patience with clay.
You have to wait. You have to wait a lot. And also the other thing, the other side that is very new to me, it's that once it's fired, it's like you have to deal with what you have, you know? You couldn't, like, I couldn't break off a part and then rebuild an extension on it and then sand it or whatever. Like, it's sort of, you're kind of like stuck with what you did, which I think is really interesting because it gives it a personality that I'm not used to. I mean, like the materials that I've used are usually, I've always been very flexible and sort of like sub, in a way, submissive to my will. And all of a sudden, ceramics, it's like it has two phases, right? It's like extremely flexible before it's fired, but once it's fired,
It's going to
it
impose its will on you.
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes,
And I
yeah.
see that as a I see that as a kind of personality of the material that I find fascinating, and I wanna learn how to play with that. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Now, you mentioned color, and of course, we're really interested in color because I guess I was interested in how do I apply color, and so that's where the podcast came out of. What's your approach to color? How do you think about that when you're making your work?
That's really, that's interesting. I never thought about it. It's so intuitive. I mean, I think that I think that there's two types of approaches in my case. And sometimes I start a piece and I feel like it has to be very minimalist in terms of colors, and there's not a lot of colors, and they're quite subtle. And then I like to sort of like overall, use colors in a very sort of a muted way, in a very simple way. And then I start adding little touches of brighter colors as, as the piece lets me do it. And sometimes as I add those brighter colors, I can feel like the energy is asking for more. It really likes it. And so I can just decide to just go all the way and add as many colors as I want, to make the piece like super vibrant. But other times, it's more, it stays quite controlled. And I see it maybe as a kind of a, there's a different, like, we were talking about spirits and energies earlier in the conversation, and I feel like there's different types of energies that come through the work when I'm working in the studio. And sometimes it's what I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes it's more of a feminine energy, and sometimes it's more of a masculine energy. And they have very different attitudes. And I think that whenever I'm working on a piece and I start feeling that sort of feminine energy, it's much, much more intense and wild. And when it's a masculine energy, it's much more ordered and controlled. And yeah.
What other kind of energies do you have when you sit with your work? You mentioned masculine and feminine. Are there other kinds of energies that you experience?
Yeah, there's a trickster energy. And then that's an archetype that's that I've become aware of recently. But I like now that I look back at my life, I can see how that sort of trickster spirit has been in my practice, always with me in the studio ever since I started making art. It's sort of like what defines the way that I create, as a spirit that's sort of like always jumping from one point to another in a very unpredictable way. It's also a spirit that is not afraid to, how do you say, dive into the unconscious. He's not, it's a spirit that's kind of playful and not afraid of anything, not afraid of darkness, not afraid of light, not afraid of going from one place to the other. And I see, so I see that as a trickster spirit. And in my work, it has sort of like taken the shape of the rabbit.
Oh, okay. Because that trickster image is really deep in indigenous cultures, where they see that as sometimes, as you described, having a lot of different kinds of energy that sometimes is welcome and sometimes not welcome.
I mean, I think that the trickster, it can, you know, it has its purpose. It has its purpose. I think it's really important to the trickster is really important in order to not stay stagnant or not be too comfortable with what you're doing. The trickster spirit is always there. Like, you know, when if ever I'm too comfortable working on something, the trickster spirit might make it collapse. And then I have no choice but to sort of rebuild something completely different that has a, you know, that has a different direction. Or So it has its purpose, and I think that in my studio it's really important. But sometimes it's going too far, and I have to say, okay, no, I'm not listening to you anymore. You're
Yeah.
gonna get out of my studio, and
Yeah, it's time for you to go sit in the corner for a little while.
exactly. It's time for order to sort of like take control over what's going on. I can't let myself be controlled by too much by
That kind of crazy energy.
I can't let myself be possessed too much. Now, just a little bit. Being possessed is kind of interesting, but you got to be careful not to fall too deep into that.
I have this question in my mind about kind of how you work in the in your studio. I hear you talking about liking to work quickly, so that's your choice of materials that you can use, and that it's an intuitive process. And at the same time, I hear you talking about energies and being able to feel them and reflect on them and allow them to be there, which sometimes I think of anyway, and maybe I'm incorrect, is that it can be a quiet a part of ourselves when we're paying attention to that. So I wonder, in your studio, are you working quickly? Are you taking time to reflect on that and notice those energies? Like, how do you work when you're
But there's different moods, you know. I think that, for example, during the day, I'm very organized. During the day, you know, I have a list of things that I have to do, and I don't have the time too much to listen to those spirits or whatever. But at night, then that's when they come out, you know. It's a different, totally different vibe. You know, it's like at night, just because maybe it's a little scary. It's a li like the light is not like I don't see things as clearly as then it's as if like there was this context at night that's totally appropriate for maybe the unconscious to sort of manifest in certain ways. So depending on the time of the day, I think it's like, you know, that's what different times of day mean different vibes.
Well, it sounds like that when you are there during the day, you're very focused on your work, right? So you've got lists, you know what you're doing, you've got tasks that you need to get done, and then at more at night, you're able to let a lot of that go, and that allows a different experience with the mind and with the natural world when we get into those darkened experiences more at night.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's because during the day, I'm sort of like I'm working with the world. You know, I'm sort of I'm in real time. I think in terms of time. It does, if I need material, the stores are open. I can go buy some materials. I have to go before the store closes. You know, so I have to consider every aspect of the world, of the outside world, you know. And then at night, that doesn't happen, you know. There's no outside world, you know. So yeah.
Very cool. Hey, now I usually ask our guests about a challenge that they might have had in their work. What's a challenge that you experienced, and how did you overcome that challenge?
I mean, there's been a lot. There's been many, but should I just choose one or?
Well, choose as many as you like.
Okay. So, you know, I told you about the sort of becoming aware of the invisible spirit on the other side that's sort of activated when I touch material. And as I work on the piece, I'm becoming more and more aware of like, that spirit, and it's sort of becoming more and more present in the studio. But that's a kind of like realization that I've had recently. I mean, a few years ago, maybe 4 years ago, it was the first time that it happened for me. Or it's not the first time that it happens, but it's the first time that I was aware of it. Of the fact that there was, it's almost as if it was someone else's will that was trying to control me or control the way that the work was being made. And I got really excited. And because it was the first time. So I got really excited and I just decided to give complete control to that spirit. And so after I gave complete control to that spirit, and actually it was a witch detail, but yeah, it was like I was telling her that it was such a great honor to have been chosen to help her manifest, you know? So I kind of put myself in a sort of submissive position in regards to that archetype. I sort of put myself in a submissive position and I just said, I will do whatever you want me to do. And I shouldn't have done that because, like, I was dragged into the most intense like process of making a sculpture and then afterwards it went too far and I was trying to fight against it and so and th then so then it became I was trying to fight against it because there are certain directions that I did not want to go into, but she wanted me to go there. So then I realized that it was a fight. There was a battle between my ego and whatever she was, you know? So at the end, I mean, and when I realized that it was a battle, I also realized that I wasn't going to win that battle. And so I just decided to let her go all the way with what she wanted to do, what she wanted to be, you know? But now I know not to sort of like let myself be in such a submissive position. And now since then, I'm only collaborating. We have to be on equal grounds, you know. It's an honor for me to sort of help the invisible become visible. It's great honor. But it has to be a collaboration.
There are rules.
I cannot give all the power otherwise to the invisible, otherwise it's really gonna make my it could make my life miserable, you know?
How did you make the decision to retain some of that control and then have that collaboration? At what point did you say, this has gone too far? I need to retain that. I need to pull back a little bit.
I think it was the intensity. I think it was the intensity. She wanted to be infinitely intense and in many, many ways. That's all she wanted. She wanted to be infinitely intense. And of course, for me, it was like, even like physically, it was just too much.
As I'm listening to you talk about this, I'm particularly fascinated with this because I really think that there's an energy there that you're articulating very well. But this kind of conversation actually might scare some people. They might be a little anxious about listening to you talk about these kinds of things. Is there a need for people to be afraid?
That's a really good question. I mean, no, I don't think that there's a need to be afraid. And also, you know, what I'm becoming aware is that when I'm talking about the spirits, you know, I'm not really talking literally about invisible things that exist outside of me. I'm really basically talking about unconscious aspects of my personality, you know, like the witch that wants to be infinitely intense, that's an aspect of myself, you know. And I'm just like, as I'm working on her, I'm letting her exist. She's part of me, you know. So it's not people shouldn't be afraid, you know. It's just I'm kind of like through my art, I'm sort of like my art is offering me the possibility of connecting with unconscious aspects of myself. That's all.
It is true, I think, that art really gives us an opportunity to dive deeper into ourselves and to understand ourselves much better and to grow through that experience, which is what I hear you describing.
Yeah, totally. No, it's great. I mean, it's I a few years ago I started being really interested in the work of Carl Jung. And yeah, I've been it's sort of like helped me make sense of what I was doing as an artist and how I could use it to reflect on myself. And learn about myself and learn about who I was, and that I can use my art also to see aspects of myself that I didn't know were there, you know. That's what I mean by diving into the unconscious, you know. It's when I'm saying the unconscious, I mean the unconscious in me, you know.
It's almost like an idea I will have with or a conversation I'll have with myself is, where did that come from? Like, why am I doing that? What's the so it's similar to what you're
It's
describing in
amazing.
some ways.
It's amazing. And I think that like, and now I realize that I look at work that I did 20 years ago, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh wow, now I understand, you know. It can take a long time. It's a mysterious process, you know. You can make something, and you're, as you're saying, you're like, oh, but why did that come out? Why did it take that shape? Or why am I making rabbits? And then it's mysterious. You don't understand, but it is what it is. And then years later, you sort of like things happen, and you start understanding, oh, that's exactly what it meant. That's like, I think that I do a lot of, I analyze my own dreams every night. Every morning when I wake up, I write down my dreams and then I analyze them. And I think it works the same way. Dreams are like, I see art just like dreams, just like myth, as being a platform on which I can communicate with the unconscious. And that's what dreams are,
For
like
sure.
when there's a when you dream of of encountering a wolf, for example, you can, it can stay mysterious until you sort of realize, oh, well, that the wolf is an aspect of myself that I've always been afraid of, and that's why it's been really repressed, because I'm afraid of the wolf in me, yeah, so same thing for when I make art.
It really resonates with me. In my background was I was a psychologist for many years and did some work around sort of gestalt dream analysis and in that component, at least what I was doing was really around becoming one's a part of each part of the dream represented a part of yourself. And so if you can be in a way, I guess, imagine yourself as the wolf or the tree or whatever's in the dream, and that each of those represent a piece of you. It's another way to get a little deeper into yourself. So I get what you mean. That's really interesting stuff. Hey, I don't want to take up too much of your time, so I'm respectful of that because you're a busy fellow, but I have one question left, and that is really some advice that you might have for an up and coming artist. Do you what if you could give one nugget? I always think of these things as a nugget we could walk away with. What advice would you give somebody as they're on their journey with art?
I've been asked that a few many times, and my answer always changes. And right now, I would say that to take art really seriously, not in the sense of being serious. When you're creating, you can let every like a humorous aspect of your personality come out, and like it doesn't have to be serious, but art itself is a big deal. And that's even like so I'm like, it can be something that you just give extra time. And I would say, I would say if you want to be an artist, then it has to be, your life has to be devoted to that as much as possible. And I know that it's difficult, but that it can be it's really important. It's really important. The idea, we talked about that earlier, like the idea of giving a shape to the unconscious, of making the invisible visible, is important, not just for yourself, but for the world. And so it has to be respected that way.
Wonderful.
I don't know if that's a good piece of advice,
I
but
think that's very good. I think that's lovely and deep and meaningful, and I think the audience will really appreciate that as much as we really appreciate you spending some time with us today. This has been a wonderful interview and very insightful, and so we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was great to talk to you.
Yes, thank you so much.